I'm here with Tobias Guinant, who is the main author of Peace Operations 2025, a production of the Center for International Peace Operations located in Berlin. And I'm also joined by the director of ZIF, the Center for International Peace Operations. Welcome to both of you. My first question is, what is Peace Operations 2025? What is this publication and how did you do it? How did you go about making it?
It's a publication on the future of peace operations. We thought there's a lot has been said about peacekeeping and peace building and peace operations, but no one has really applied modern scenario methodology to peace operations. So the process how we developed these peace operations has been really interesting and stimulating because we gathered a group of about 25 experts from the UN, the EU, OCE, other regional organizations, some of them decision makers, others practitioners and experts. And deliberately, we also invited a couple of non-peace operations insiders, people who kind of think out of the box, who come from a totally different field and don't take everything for granted as we do in the insider community. And we met in three workshops on three continents, in Berlin, in Addis Ababa, and in New York. And then we went through various steps of the scenario methodology with the help of a foresight company. And at the end, we came up with 12 key factors. And these key factors will be the ones on which we build the scenarios. So for each key factor, we had a projection, usually various projections. We combined these projections and put together, these are the four scenarios. But interesting, of course, are the key factors and their projections, not really the scenarios, because they are only a fiction, they are only a text built on these key factors. Now we have four scenarios. One is erratic progress. That's basically what we're in right now. We could have called it muddling through. Then we have kind of the worst case scenario, which is called national interests. Then we have something like in between. It's called regional diversity. And the last one that is really the optimistic outlook, it's called global cooperation.
Now, what were some of the key factors that you identified? You mentioned 12 factors. What were they and what were the more important ones? Because they all obviously wouldn't influence the same.
Well, actually, we identified 14 factors in all. Only two are what we call given factors. And the difference between a given factor and a key factor is that with a given factor, we know the future development. And those two are climate change and demographic growth. We know that world climate is going to change and we know that world population is going to grow. The other 12 factors have, as already mentioned, at least two projections. They can go up and down or stay the same. A very important example, of course, would be the state of the world economy, which is obviously crucial because it will determine the amount of funding available for peace operations. Other factors, for example, are the evolution of international organizations, the role of emerging powers and the role they will choose to play, whether they will engage with multilateral peace operations, whether they will disengage or maybe find new ways for themselves in this field. And we also have a number of smaller factors, such as the role of modern technologies, which are probably more of a sideshow, but can have, in specific instances, very important effects.
Speaking of new actors, I noticed throughout the publication there are several references to the role of the private sector. So private security companies figure in, I think, two of the scenarios. And then one of the scenarios actually has corporations financing some of the equipment that peacekeepers use and things like that. Can you tell me a little bit about how your thinking on the private sector played into some of these scenarios and how big of a factor it was?
Well, I would say in the past we were used to the fact that peace operations basically are being organized by multilateral organizations. However, in the recent years, we have seen that there are more and more new actors. I mean, like 15, 20 years ago, civil society, all these NGOs evolved as actors, important actors in conflict and crisis contexts. But we have also what we call the norm or social entrepreneurs like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Ford Foundation, who do spend a lot of money in areas of crisis. And some of them are really involved in the same areas where peace operations are being implemented. We thought if you also think about the role of private security companies that in an increasing manner support logistics, also peace operations themselves, that in the future there might be a bigger role for private companies. And of course, especially in times of austerity, it will become an issue considering partnerships. private-public partnerships with companies that might support the logistics base of a peace operation, or that might provide all the cars, or that might even provide helicopters that we are in dear need of. So this was the idea that they probably will play a much bigger role in the future.
Right. My next question is, who is Grace Comunia?
A figment of, in this case, literally of my imagination. We came up with the idea that we wanted these four scenarios, the actual narratives. We wanted to connect them somehow. And an idea that we came up with when we were sitting around, literally around a table together, just like here now, is that, well, let's take a person that's active in peace operations today, and think about what this person will do in, well, our time horizon is 2025. We say, okay, let's look back from, I think it's New Year's Eve on 2025, and where this person is, what, in this case, she is actually doing then, and use her as a mirror of where peace operations can go. As well, she, in one case, for example, she is working in the Museum of Peace Operations in the negative scenario.
It seems like in three out of the four scenarios, Grace is slightly disappointed in where she is when we meet her at the end of 2025. Did this scenario exercises and what it led to, these four different scenarios that you came up with, did it make you more or less optimistic about the future of peacekeeping operations, given all the analysis that went into this?
It's a good question. We have actually discussed it among colleagues, and you would find 50% would tell you that they are more pessimistic because, I mean, basically the scenarios, are, apart from the global diversity one, are not optimistic outlooks. But there would be the other 50% that tells us you have to be realistic. And we do know that the nature of conflict and crisis will change. That's no news, I would say. But I think what we really want to contribute with these scenarios is we contribute to a dialogue on how to get better with maybe limited resources. So I would say I'm not depressed, to use that word, or I'm not pessimistic. It's rather the idea to create scenarios that stimulate thinking that hasn't been around before in a different way. I think nobody in the group really felt that they are too pessimistic. Because, I mean, everybody would think that this erratic progress, how we called it, is basically what we have now, but 12 years later. And of course, there's always very positive developments. I mean, there's many things being conceptual doctrine, evolving regional organizations, taking more responsibility. We have, of course, a long list of positive developments. However, we also know about all the shortcomings, and we have to focus on the shortcomings, of course.
In terms of what you do with these scenarios moving forward, can you say a little something about how useful these could be or what uses you can have for them?
Well, basically, our idea is that people work with these scenarios. It's not meant to be just another publication that is thought-provoking or stimulating, but after a while you put it into your shelf and that's it. But rather the idea is that we use it. For example, we at ZIF use it in our training courses. And the idea is that people use these scenarios and discuss the relevance for it today and see what developments do we have to support to get to a more preventive, proactive mode in peace operations, and what do we have to avoid the more negative futures, so to say, in the world of peace operations. So we are also doing a series of workshops where people come together in order to explore the operational implications out of the scenarios for today's work. So we really see it as a living document.
Were there any surprises that you came up with after doing all this analysis that you got to the end and you were surprised by the influence of certain factors or where certain factors led you down the road to a final outcome?
One thing I certainly wasn't aware of, and that is, again, probably because of our background, because we're very much caught up in the day-to-day work of the major implementing organizations, of course, and these points all came from the experts from outside of our field, is, for example, the potentials for the role of social media, in a positive and a negative way, of course, and the role of technology in peace operations and the possibilities for that. That was certainly a surprise, and I simply wasn't aware of how much funding is already made available by the private sector, particularly through the mega foundations, which is quite a sobering thought when you compare that number to, for example, the operating budget of the United Nations. Right.
Just for our listeners, can you sketch out in a little more detail each of the four scenarios?
The first one, and that is really the, we try to avoid that, but it is the status quo scenario, the erratic progress. This really is very much the world of peace operations today, just down the road. The other three are, in that sense, more interesting, although they are probably less realistic because they're actually quite different. And, well, you could say our short names were the status quo, the positive, the negative, and the regionalization scenarios. And that really, I think, gives you a first idea of what they're about. In a sense, I think it was also the impression that the feedback we got from the various presentations we've done so far is that the regionalization is, in a sense, the most interesting one. And the underlying idea is that the UN is no longer seen by, at least by some of the major players, as satisfactory or as sufficient, at least. So what you find there are regional blocs, for example, in Latin America, obviously in Africa, but also in Asia, where the UN is possibly used as giving a mandate, possibly, but all the implementation is really done by greatly strengthened regional actors. In some cases, existing ones, such as the African Union. In other cases, we wrote in, so to speak, new regional organizations, for example, in Latin America. And then, of course, are the positive and the negative ones, which are really the dream and the nightmare scenario, so to speak. They're both very much based on the question of which way the world economy is going. And the one, you obviously have a world economic crisis, and nations draw inwards. In a sense, you could almost say it's a bit like the 1920s and 30s. And the end of the League of Nations, so to speak, the same thing happening now to peace operations now, where the only area that's really left of international cooperation is on border control and policing. All other multilateral activities basically come to a stop. And that is the one that we call national interest scenario. And then there's the global cooperation, which really is just that. It's a new golden age, so to speak, based on economic growth. And we also invented a solution to the world energy crisis, which always helps. In all of these, of course, there's always either a virtuous circle or a vicious circle. As the economy is doing well, probably the number of conflict worldwide is going down. At the same time, more money is available, so everything becomes a lot easier. The negative case is obviously the opposite. You not only have more conflicts, and you have also less resources to address them.
Excellent. Very interesting. I want to thank Almut Weiland-Karimi, the director of the Center for International Peace Operations in Berlin, and the main author of Peace Operations 2025, Tobias Ginant. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.